everybody. My name's Richard, and I'm an addict.
Oh, yeah. Welcome.
And Carl, how lucky are you?
Huh?
You know, first day, you know, one of the greatest things that's ever happened in my life, to be in a room with people from 34 years on down. Hopefully it will be a day you'll never forget. I want to thank, and I forget who it was that asked me to do this, I don't know, maybe 6 months ago. And I'm privileged and honored to be here. It's a great breakfast. I think some of the luckiest people here in your city, Tulare, Visalia, Hanford, and all these other places you all come from, they're the lucky ones. See, because we're all in here. There was a time when if you were all out there, they'd be in trouble. So it's good to see everybody here. I've got to tell you, I had a preconceived notion of what was going to happen when I got here at this event, when I was asked. And in my mind, I envisioned 12 guys sitting around the table having coffee, shooting shit, having some breakfast, and you guys having to tolerate me for whatever length of time it takes to give you this story. And I'm completely surprised by this crowd. This is amazing. It's a beautiful thing. I'm privileged to have come up here. My job that I have has me traveling around the state, and I'm not a truck driver. And I've gotten to meet a lot of people in the fellowship from as far north as Sacramento all the way down to San Diego, and I make a point of it. Whenever I'm in another town that I've never been in, I always I know how to find a meeting. You know, what I was using, it didn't matter what town I was in, I knew how to find some votes. And I usually started at the bus station and just worked my way out. So I found what I wanted. You know, today, we have things like the internet. You know, there's directories all over how we can make a phone call and find a meeting. And when I found the meeting here in Tulare, I found some new friends. And I made an effort to come up here once a month, and I made sure that I attended that Monday night meeting. It's a great little group. Because, see, my home group meets on Monday nights. And when I'm not home, I got to find a place to light on Monday night, because this body, this brain, expects to be at a meeting at 7:30 on Monday nights, no matter where I'm at. And I found this one here in Tulare, and I started calling it my home group away from home. And in the process of going to that meeting, I hooked up with a lot of people in the area and had me over to their homes for dinner. You know, taking me a few places here and there. We bumped into each other across the state. And my connection with this area started at the convention in Bakersfield a few years back when I was in a marathon meeting. And I heard this one gentleman share and vice versa. And then when I walked into that meeting in Tulare, he goes, "I remember you from the marathon meeting in Bakersfield," and that's how it started. And I have no clue what I'm going to say, although I have a resentment that I need to share with you guys right now, or get it out of the way. You know, my clean date is January 1st, 1991. You should have held this fucking meeting 2 weeks from now. So I'm going to sit up and say I got 19 years clean. Because, you know, we always want what we want. Sometimes we don't want to wait. I was going to read from Just for Today, but you guys did it already. And I found it very touching when I read it sitting there eating. Because it talks about being clean and living dirty. And it's something that happens to people sometimes. You know, and it also talks about doing the right thing for the right reasons without a witness. You know, if you learn nothing here today in my pitch from me, know that that's one of the things I believe in the most. Doing the right thing for the right reasons without a witness. When I do that daily, I can lay down and sleep real well at night knowing that I was the best person I could be. You know, when I share sometimes, I get caught up in talking about things that annoy me in Narcotics Anonymous, and today's no different. I'm not one of those people that comes up here and says, I know less now than when I got here. And if you're one of them people, I ain't hanging out with you. Because if you get dumber by the fucking minute, I don't want nothing to do with you. You're supposed to learn some stuff while you're here. You know, I'm not one of them that carries up reference material to the podium, even though I came real close to doing it today. But you saved me. Because you read some things for today. If I don't know what I'm going to talk about, I don't need that book to tell me what to talk about. Now, literature saved my life, but I don't have to quote from the book because I'm sure each and every one of you has your time with your literature. So what I'm going to try and do is share a little bit of my experience, make some hope, and I'll start with my story. And I got to let you know, I came from a very, talk about bipolar family, you know, from one extreme to the other. I was born in Newport Beach in 1940, and in a place called Hope Hospital on the Bluffs. I grew up in Newport Beach. My father was a part-time dory fisherman. You know, I learned to surf when I was like 6 years old. There's a bar down on the pier in Newport Beach called Blackie's. And I thought of that place when I saw the name of this place. And if you ever have a reason to go in there to pull somebody out, then don't be going in there to catch you no drink. On the wall is a picture of me and my father surfing right out by the pier. I'm 4 years old. I'm on his shoulders. We're tandem riding on a 16-foot redwood surfboard. It probably weighs about as much as a 56 Chevrolet. My dad was a gambler, philanthropist, a liar, a cheat, a thief, and he raised his son real good. My parents divorced when I was 8 years old and she moved off to San Bernardino. So I got a mother in San Bernardino, I got a father right on the ocean front, 28th Street, Newport Beach. But many times I'd come home from school and it'd be a naked girl in the living room. So I'd say, Dad, who's that? And he goes, well, that's my work. So how many of you going to work today, Dad? He goes, until it's done. My father worked as an assistant trainer for a gentleman named Charlie Whittingham. So I grew up on the backside of Santa Anita Racetrack, Hollywood Racetrack, Del Mar, and sometimes Caliente Racetrack in Tijuana. And some of you aren't old enough to know that Caliente, well, they only run dogs in that. So I grew up in a bohemian lifestyle. My father was a beatnik. You know, some of you don't know what a beatnik is. If you don't know, ask that old guy with 34 years. So I grew up at home listening to John Coltrane, Miles Davis, Charlie Mingus, you know, sometimes some swing music, naked women running in and out of the house, my old man going to the racetrack. Sometimes we'd eat hot dogs, sometimes we'd eat steaks. Sometimes we'd eat at the neighbor's house. And it went like that. The other extreme was my mother, who was a school teacher, social worker. Straight and narrow. So it was destined for them to be split up. I guess she was just overwhelmed by that bohemian dude on the beach she met one day. And then the reality set in and they realized that life together was not going to work. So I spent most of my life going back and forth from Newport Beach to San Bernardino. If you know anything about Orange County and San Bernardino, that's like culture shock daily. You know, one of the things that occurred by living like that was that I learned how to fit in no matter where I went. I could go to San Bernardino, go down on 16th and Mount Vernon. And if anybody here knows anything about San Bernardino, you shouldn't be hanging out at 16th and Mount Vernon. And then I could turn around and go down to the pier at Newport Beach. And I had different personalities to fit the situation I was in. Like most of you. I started riding horses when I was 8. I was an exercise rider in Santa Anita and Hollywood Park, and I would take a $5 ticket. I get $5 for every mount that I rode in the mornings. Down the track, sometimes in the fog. So I was earning money at a very young age. I saved a lot of money. I didn't know much about using back then, but my first addiction was money. And I had to have some money. You are who your wallet is. If your wallet's a little thin, you're a little thin. You know, if your wallet's fat, you're fat. At age 19, I was drafted into the military. And being the knucklehead that I am, I said, fuck, I'm going to show them. Ain't nobody going to tell me what to do and drop me into the Army. So I ran down that day and I enlisted. When I came back and saw my friends before I had to report to the reception center downtown L.A. and they were going to ship me out to Fort Ord, I told my friends, I said, yeah, I got that draft notice, man. I showed them I run my life, so I enlisted. But what I found out later on was I could have been drafted for 2 years and I enlisted for six. By this time, I was already smoking a little weed, you know, smoking a little Yeska, listening to a little Miles Davis at home, because I would steal my old man's cash. He had a little bit here and there. I never really knew how deep he was into that until after I got clean and talked to some of my family. So at age 19, I went off to the military. They gave me a bank of tests, find out what's going on up here. Let's see what you qualify to do. So they told me that I could have gone off to officer's candidate school. They said, you have a high IQ. So I showed them I volunteered for the infantry. Because the idea of carrying a gun and being a tough guy kind of fit really well. I like that. That sounded cool. You know, and I got to tell you, most of my life I have been striving to be the coolest person in the room. All my life, that's all I ever wanted to do was be cool. Like Fonzie. Just be cool. Because I watched that show. Doors would part. Women would come running up to him. He got music for free. You know, he could turn on the lights with a snap. I thought, man, I want that. I want to be cool. And I remember my first sponsor told me to look that up in the dictionary, and I did. You know what it said? Not so hot. So all my life, I striving to be cool. I figured, what's a cooler way than to join the military and be in the infantry? So I trained in the infantry. It was time for me to go off to another duty station, and this guy came into our barracks and said, you know what, anybody here want to go airborne? And I thought, well, that sounds cool, so I volunteered to go into the airborne. After I finished a jump school in Fort Benning, Georgia, I went over and saw this enlistment-type officer there, and I volunteered to become a ranger. So with all said and done, by the time I was 20 years old, I was an airborne ranger in the Army Infantry for the 25th Division. I was then assigned to a ranger training center in Schofield Barracks, Hawaii, where I spent 9 months. Within almost 20 months, I was walking through the jungles of Vietnam. I did two tours of Vietnam. Both times I was wounded. The first time I got wounded, I came home. I got to back up a little bit. After I had 2 months in country, they flew me out of the jungle, took me back to Da Nang, and told me that my father had passed away of a heart attack. And he was 42 years old. And it wasn't because he was overdoing it. He had been born with a heart defect, something that today could be handled, minor procedure in the hospital, and you get to live a long, productive life. Back then, it wasn't so easy, and he passed away, and they flew me back. I was offered the opportunity to discharge from the military at that time because I was a sole surviving son. I was the last person to carry my father's name. And there was a loophole in the contract with the government, and you could have gotten out of military service. No shame, no harm, no foul, and I could have come home. But I didn't. I went back. When I was wounded the first time and got my first Purple Heart, they sent me back and I went to Fort Bragg. And at Fort Bragg, I was there for a little while. They were going to send me to DOI school and make me a drill instructor. And I went downtown, tried to find some dope. There wasn't much. So I talked to an officer, and I volunteered to go back for a second tour of duty in Vietnam. Because I had remembered a moment in Vietnam that struck me and really changed my life forever. I went to a whorehouse in Saigon, I got laid, I got loaded, and I got the clap all in the same day. And it was downhill from there. And when I was back here in the United States, it was near impossible for me to find some opium. So I went back. Second time through, I got wounded again. I have two purple hearts and a bronze star. Tied up in my paper in San Bernardino. Big hero. And you know what? None of that prevented me from going down the path that I chose. And that was to stay loaded. I moved back to Orange County when I got back from the military, but I would spend a lot of time driving to Chinatown or Los Angeles because that was the only place I could find opium. And I didn't want to try that heroin shit, but then I'd get hooked, man, and I'd be in heaven. You know, opium was cool. You could smoke jazz, have a few dreams, listen to a little jazz, you know. It was almost like just smoking a little weed. I didn't realize that I was getting strung out on this opium. A few years passed on and somebody said, hey, you know, you can smoke that black tar heroin, too. So really? So I just shut my trip down from Newport Beach to Chinatown in L.A. to Newport Beach to Santa Ana. And in Santa Ana, I could go visit Chewy and pick up my goods. So suffice it to say, I used to live and lived to use for many years. Finally reached the point where life wasn't doing too good. So somehow I managed over the years to graduate from UCLA. I graduated from college without a job. My hustle back in those days was touting horses at the racetrack. Because I still had connections on the backside and I could get a little extra information on a few ponies, place a few bets. But mostly I would tell you how to bet, and if you won, the trick was you get 10% for touting the horse, for giving you the inside information. You know, gamblers love to have that inside information, man. They want to have that sure thing. But see, what they didn't realize was if there was 9 horses in the race, and I picked 9 different people and gave them each a different horse, I'm going to get paid. What was cool is if you found 18 people and you gave that winner to 2 people, I'd go up. And I spent a lot of years doing that, going to college, playing the horses, hanging out at the racetrack, doing a little bit of gambling here and there, playing a little pool. Because that's what my father did. He was a gambler. And my college education, my gambling skills, all of these things did not prevent me from ending up under a bridge on Tippecanoe and the 10 freeway in San Bernardino with matching luggage. I had 2 Stater Brothers bags with everything that I owned, thinking that there was some valuable stuff. That was my matching luggage. And right up the street on Tippecanoe is a place called the Jerry Fetters VA Hospital. And I had picked up a newspaper off the ground and I was reading it. And there just happened to be an article this one week about how there was a group of Vietnam veterans that were going to the Jerry Fetters Hospital and they were petitioning the government because they were saying that they were suffering from the after effects of Agent Orange and PTSD, and they needed to make some money. They needed to get paid because they couldn't survive in society. And I thought, that's me. Vietnam vet, PTSD, Agent Orange. I probably got all that shit. I know at least I got the Vietnam vet. So my thinking is, okay, I'm going to go to the VA and get in that line and get me that check. Because I'm a dope fiend. I love free shit. Free shit wakes me up. I go to the mall and see a sign on the wall that says free stuff over here. And I'll go get in line. I don't even know what they're giving away and I'll go get in line. And if you get out of line, I'm going to tell the person at the window that you told me to get yours for you. Because I'm always looking for some free shit. So I went to the VA hospital for some free shit. And the doctor, first thing they said when I was in the emergency room there, by the way, I was kicking. I have it. I needed to get well real quick. He said, you feel like harming yourself. So I had to make sure. I thought about this. I'm going, you know what? I've got to give the right answers to the right people so I can get my check. So he said, do you have feelings of harming yourself? I said, yeah. How about, do you have any feelings of harming others? And I went, well, who do you want harmed? So they admitted me, and they put me in a padded cell on the east side of the second floor, like protective custody, right? So I'm in a room about half the size of that men's room if you went in there. And it's literally padded. I always thought that was a joke. I was in a padded cell. They even pad the fucking ceiling. Thinking, God damn, you gotta jump real high to fucking jump. I'm in this padded cell in the VA hospital on the second floor, and they come in, and they're going to give me some drugs. Okay. I don't know what they're giving me. I have no clue what they're giving me. So I've been there a couple of days, wandering around the hallways. Finally, they let me out of that padded cell. I don't know how many days have gone by, but it's been a little while. I finally kicked. I was able to keep food down. My hair stopped hurting. Some heroin addicts in there, huh? You know what I'm talking about. That shit's so bad your hair hurts. So, I've got a little freedom now in the nut wards. And I'm doing a little shuffle around up and down the hallway. I got my little pajamas on, my ass hanging out. It's real hard to look cool when the ass is hanging out. But I was trying. I gave it my shot, you know. And I would look down this, and down the end of the hallway, long hallway, was a double door with two windows, no bigger than that, each window. And they got wire mesh in them. So you can't break, bust out, right? Now who the fuck's going to fit through a window this big? You know what I mean? So I see that, and I would always walk up to that, it's like a caged animal, and peek out that window. Because I could see down the hallway in the hospital, to the next unit next door. So it was a Thursday night and I was looking out that window and here comes some women. And then some men. And they kept making a left turn. And if I went over to the other side of the dormitory, the ward, to where the bigger window was at, I could actually see through three sets of glass to a patio on the ward next door. And there were them people. And they were laughing and joking and smoking cigarettes and drinking coffee. And I thought, fuck, who are them guys, you know? So I would watch and I would look. And then one day I was interviewed by the doctor. He came in and did an evaluation on me. And he said, you know, Richard, we've decided that you're not nuts. You've just been running a scan here. You were just strung out. And we're going to cut you loose. I want you to get out. I said, wait a minute, man, what do you mean you want me to get out? I'm a veteran, man, I got rights. This is my hospital. You can't throw me out. And the doctor said, look, Richard, you keep trying to kill yourself, and we keep trying to save your life. You win. So go on out there and die. Or we can check you in next door to the ATU, the Alcohol and Drug Treatment Program. And I'm thinking three shifts. That's probably step two into me getting that check. So I said, yeah, man, send me over there, man. That looks cool. Hey, the people still showing up on Thursdays over there. What are they doing? He goes, well, you'll find out. So I go over there, and it was a Wednesday. And I get a little room. I'm sharing a room with four guys. The door's not locked. The next morning, they did an intake on me, they assigned me, and they said, you're going to do 28 days here in the hospital. And then it's a 6 to 9 month program on the streets, and we have a house downtown San Bernardino. Are you willing to do that to change your life? And I thought, fuck yeah. I'm willing to do whatever it takes for me to get to That evening they had a meeting, and these people showed up, right? And they had cookies, and some bad coffee, vegetables. It was girls. Oh, yeah. Try to look cool in front of girls when all you have is a pair of paper pajamas. You can have a seat, no, I'm good right here. Full leather suit, a chain, a knife strapped to his leg. His name was Two Fingers Bob. I found out it was Two Fingers Bob later because he didn't have these two fingers. Harley was parked outside.
He looked cool.
But the best thing was, he had the best looking girl with him on his arm. And I looked over there and I went, I want what he's got. And I made a Harley. So I sat and listened to that meeting. Turns out it was a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. I had no idea what these people were really doing here. I just knew that there was cookies and something else to look at besides them other fools on that ward with me. And I started paying attention. No fees know how to pay attention, right? We know how to listen. But the only time we listen to anything is when it really affects us personally. I appreciate it. But if someone talks about, I want to change your life, we got to do some work with some steps, we got to get involved in this box, I don't even hear that. I'm thinking, when can I get to the cookies? When's the cookie break? So I started listening. So I mentioned before, I'm a college graduate. I graduated from UCLA with a degree in theater. I have done some work in television and movies over the years, but it's been a long time since I was involved in that lifestyle. But I know how to memorize and recite. You tell me some shit I need to hear and throw back out there to show you how cool I am, I can do that. So I paid attention. Because one thing I did notice was the people up at the front table at that meeting, they got attention. Because we wouldn't start the meeting until that one fat broad showed up. So she must be important. And then everyone complained until the coffee guy showed up. So he must be important. And then that girl, the two women that would show up with their boxes of cookies, I knew they were important. So whenever they spoke, I listened. And I would hear one day the secretary share a little bit how, I want to thank you for saving my life. Blah, 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 blah. Next week I will celebrate 2 years clean. So, what you got me in space for 2 years? So the following week shows up, she comes up there and takes a 2-year cake, and all of you people applauded. And she was the focal point. And you sang. And got hugs at the break. We went up to her like, man, this is something. And I thought, fuck, I want that. I want to get out of these fucking cases pajamas. So I went to the donation box, got me some stuff, and I started paying attention, and I listened to what you people had to say. And I learned real quick, easy stuff. Keep coming back. How are you today, Richard? Just for today, it works if you're working. I would practice this stuff, man, in front of the freaking mirror. You talking to me? You talking to me? Just for today, man. And I learned to do this so well that after hanging out in that meeting for a few months, one of you fools said, I nominate Richard to be secretary. I suffer from a dual diagnosed disease. Not only am I an addict in recovery, I also suffer from selective hearing. When they said I nominate Richard to be secretary, I heard president. I'm gonna run some shit here. I have it wired in no time. So I continued. And I noticed that the birthday was the big deal. The birthday was the thing. You get to stand up there, they get to sing to you, and strange women come up and hug you. Yeah, that's what I want. So I practice my shit. Practice my shit. Time comes for me to take a year clean. I'm now secretary. I'm thinking, this is my meeting today. I'm going to do some secretifying in there, man, and then I'm going to be the birthday guy, and then I get to pick who shares. And it's going to be me. So when we go through the routine, we've got the ship person gets up there, who's got 30 days, who's got 60 days, how'd you do it? And then this motherfucker went on and on. At 60 days, he met God over at the Pet Boys. He worked all 12 steps. And life is good.
Damn.
I'm just somebody that's going to shut up. But you know, I got to be clean. I'm somebody today. Went on 6 months. Another fool got up there, man. I don't hear none of this. My brain is tuned into me. It's about me today, man, not you. I want that recognition. I want them attaboys. Pat me on the back. Anybody got a year clean? Now, this meeting is the Thursday night clean and serene group at the VA hospital in Loma Linda, and it's still there today. For a long time in my area, it was the dog and pony show. Not a seat in the house, empty. People standing in the back. Full house. Richard's up front, on stage. Again. Looking cool. I ironed my clothes that day. It looked cool. Anybody got a year clean? I said, me. And I got up there and I prepared some shit, let me tell you. I was ready. And I got up there and I froze. In the theater, some of you may know it as stage fright. In the theater, we call it going up. Anybody here's ever done any live performing in a theater and you're having a two-way conversation with somebody on stage and you've got some planned out dialogue and you say your line and you're looking at the other guy, come on, say your line, and you see his eyes go like this? That's called going up. It's like, oh, this motherfucker forgot what to say. What the fuck am I going to do now? And I stood up there with a year clean, and I went up. And all I could say was thank you. And I sat down. Fuck! I've got to wait a whole other year now. Then I realized, wait a minute, they got an 18-month shift. And them motherfuckers know everything anyway. So I'll take that 18-month shift, right? So we opened the meeting up for participation. And this room was packed. And way on the back side of the room, because there's a double door to the back, door to the center, this little old lady had come into the meeting. And she was standing in the back. And the leader we had said, it's open for participation. Who would like to share? Please raise your hand. She raised her hand. Well, hi, I'm Vicky. I'm not an addict. I'm Richard Mudd. 42 years old, and a mom shows up at the meeting. Talk about embarrassing, right? It's kind of hard to be cool when your mom's at the meeting. And she said, I don't know who you people are, and I don't know what you do, but I want to thank you for bringing my little boy home. And for the very first time in my brief time in Narcotics Anonymous in recovery, something went off in here. Something was pulled a little tight, and I felt something for the first time. And it felt strange. At 18 months clean, I sounded so fucking good, you said, I nominate Richard to be GSR. I didn't know what fucking GSR meant. I didn't even know what it was. But I knew that person went off somewhere every month and came back and had a bunch of shit with them and information. And I said, yeah, I'll do that. See, because when they said GSR, I heard emperor. So there I go, trotting off, representing the clean and serene group as the GSR at the area meeting. By the way, I want to let you guys know I hadn't worked one step. Not one. I had a sponsor at that time, and I don't even refer to him as my first sponsor because I hadn't really gotten in contact with my first sponsor yet. But I had a sponsor who was in the AA group up there in a wheelchair with a voice box and couldn't hear. I thought, fuck, there's the perfect sponsor, man. And if I run away, he can't catch me. So I ain't doing nothing, man, but saying, keep coming back. Just put it there. Of course, if you want to be the easy guy. And they thought, fuck, man, that's GSR material, right? So I went off to that group service meeting. Talk about a dysfunctional group of people. And I thought, okay, this is cool. And then they said, you know, as a group representative, one of your requirements for being involved in the subcommittee, this committee, is to get involved in the subcommittee. So I looked around the room, there's a list of subcommittees. You got activities, convention, PI. And then I seen them dudes over in the corner, and they were all looking cool. What's H&I? Really? What's H&I? But I don't know, but they look cool, don't they? All right, so I joined H&I. And I started going in on a panel at the CRC that I still go to today, 18 years later. It was 17 years I've been doing that panel. A little over 17 years. And after, to make a long story short, I worked my way to being chair of H&I. Every year we have a marathon, Memorial Day, 3 days. It was my duty this year, that year, to line up the speakers and organize the marathon for our area. And I thought, fuck, I can do that. I know how to run some shit. And I'm going to do something probably nobody has ever thought of before. So I went to our regional directory and I looked on the back page and there it was, H&I chair for every area in Southern California region. 17 guys, 17 names, 17 phone numbers. I thought, fuck, I ain't got to do nothing. I just call them. And all I got to do is say, H&I, man. And you know what? You cannot turn down any request, motherfucker, so you can get your ass over. By the way, I've read the literature front back and I have not found that paragraph yet. I think it's preceded by the paragraph that says no relationships for a year.
Oh.
But see, I can't find that one in there either. Anyway, so I'm H&I chair. I call all these people and I line up all these speakers, right? And I call this one dude from the Bay City area named Brad. I don't know if anybody here knows him. Maybe Mikey's met him. And Brad, I'd never met the guy. He was a voice on the other end of the phone. And by the way, cell phones back then were the size of a cube of butter.
Yeah.
And I had one. It didn't work, but I had one. So I called Brad and said, hey, check it out, man. I need you to speak at this marathon 5 p.m. slot. Can you be here? He said, Brad, I'll be there. H&I, you bet. I'm coming. He goes, where's it at? I said, we're having it out here at Riverside. South... West Riverside. He said, well, I'm from the Long Beach area, and I don't know how to get there. What do I do? I said, just take the 60. When you smell cow shit, turn right. So the day of the marathon comes. We got a big crowd. It's doing pretty good. And then all of a sudden, all you motherfuckers disappear. Y'all left. So where the hell is everybody going? I realized we're going to 5 o'clock dinner. Right? And I told Brad, I was very, very clear on this one point. I said, Brad, you be here at 4:30 so I can give you the rundown on how shit's going to go, you know, how's it going to happen. Don't you know I'm in charge? And it's 5:10 and no Brad. And I'm getting pissed. There's three people in the meeting room. I'm walking up back and forth in front of the building and no Brad. It's almost time for the meeting. I'm going, God damn, man. Man, are all dope fields late? For everything. And just then, this big old land barge comes sliding up, big old Lincoln. I kind of see it with my peripheral vision. I'm still pacing. Then I turn and I look to my right, and here comes this dude in a wheelchair. And he's rolling himself up the ramp. I look at him and I says, are you Brad? He goes, yeah. My fucking ego shrunk to the size of a mustard seed. I was no longer upset that he was late. God damn, Bill, you're an asshole, preacher. And I said, you know what, Brad, I gotta tell you something, man. Thank you for driving all the way out here from Long Beach, but I gotta let you know there's only three people in that meeting, man. I'm really sorry. They're out. And Brad said to me, you know what, Richard? It's okay, man. Because if it was just you and me, it would be enough. Bam! That feeling came back in my heart again. The same one I got when my mom said thank you. I get that feeling again when Brad said, if it was just you and me, it would be enough. And then I start thinking, man, you know what? This shit's real. This must be some real stuff we're doing here. What I'm trying to share with you, gentlemen, is little bits and moments in my recovery that have been a turning point in my life. And that was number two.
Keeps coming back.
Yeah. And it works and you work. They told me they had to leave early for something that's obviously very important in their lives, that I'm sure that they're highly motivated by someone else.
Thank you, Larry. I'm unfortunate.
Well, I need you out of chair, right? And somebody says, I nominate Richard to be RCF. I don't think a fuck. Top of the heap, here I come. President for sure now. Because I was going to represent our area, our area at the regional level. I've held almost every position there is in service, and none of those kept me clean. And they did not make me sane. I've held every position in my home group, and those have kept me clean. And they've led me to some semblance of sanity. Pulling out a chair and getting a cup of coffee for a newcomer has meant more to me than standing up at the World Service Office at the World Conference and talking to a bunch of people about things that I thought were important. I learned a lesson in service that the pyramid was upside down, that it all funnels back to the group, and the group is the thing. And at the group level, the important thing about the group level is Carl sitting over there at that table. It all ends with him. And I don't mean to put you out there, gentlemen. I really don't. But your name is one of the few I remember today. Once again, I never really know what I'm going to talk about. I don't know how much time I have left.
Got a whole bunch.
But good. Thank you, Mikey. But let me tell you. The first step changed my life. But I didn't get to the first step until I had almost 5 years ago. So when I hear people say, I got 18 months, I got a job, I got a car, I'm getting laid every night, I'm fucking clean, life is good, I look up at God and I go, motherfucker, your cuts in line. Later, he's up there going, hi. Are you coming? And then I look up and I go, thank you, God, for not overloading me. I'm not here to tell you that it takes 5 years to do the first step. I hope that you get involved and get deep into that as quickly and as efficiently with your sponsor as you possibly can. But I'm also here to tell you that this ain't a race. This ain't a race. Because, see, I'm a what I call a dope fiend of the genuine variety. And my brain's broken. See, I'm that fool that you met on the street corner and you said, give me your $20, I'll be right back. And I did, and I waited. And waited. I'm also that fool that went to your house, bought some bug dope, and went home bitching about it all the way. And as soon as it was all gone, I was back at your house. I'm not too bright, man. I'm wired different. Maybe you're all wired just right, but I'm wired different. And I had to fall down a bunch of times to finally get this thing. I heard someone share at a meeting not too long ago. They said, if all you do today is stay clean, you got everything. I've heard that many times. If the best thing that happens today is I don't get loaded and I stay clean today, it's a good day. I go, okay, well, that's a good day. You're right. But I don't believe that.
I don't care.
And my old sponsor taught me this. The real first sponsor, Jesse Joe, who, by the way, passed away when I had 7 years clean. He had 42 at the time. He got a liver cancer. He would tell me when I would say that, well, if all I do is stay clean today, I'm a winner. And he'd say, well, did you take a shower when you got up this morning? I said, well, yeah. He goes, okay, you stayed clean and you took a shower. Okay, well, if all I do is stay clean and take a shower, I'm a winner today. He goes, did you feed yourself today? I said, well, yeah. He goes, then you ate, you took a shower, and you stayed clean. Right? Did you harm anybody today? No, you didn't harm anybody. You took a shower. You stayed clean. You fed yourself. So don't give me this crap about, if all I do is stay clean today, it's a good day. Because you know what? You're cutting yourself short. You're cutting yourself short, and you should stand up and be proud for the things that we do today. See, because we find those things uncommon. Them people over there, they would think we're crazy. Well, everybody takes a shower and eats.
Well, you don't know me very well.
See, we do shit backwards. We're the only people on this planet that will take a sedative and try to stay awake. Or fill ourselves with stimulants and wonder why the fuck we can't go to sleep. By the way, I was a thief. I stole from Mom. Let me see, bank robbery, stealing from Mom. That's about the same, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I was a smart thief. She would have like $100 on the dresser and $20 bills. I'd steal the one in the middle. More like being brain dead and stupid. I come from a disease of addiction. And this disease of addiction covers all aspects of my life, starting with cookies, ending with God's little prayer. My wife, may she rest in peace. Mikey met my wife. I remember once we were at a convention. In fact, it was San Diego World Convention. And we got the hotel. We had the kind hotel room with the big picture window and the fireworks going off at the island because it happened at the 4th of July weekend that year. And we were laying in bed, got the TV going, got the fireworks going. We stopped for some snacks. She got herself a little carrot. And she don't know what a snack. Snack is a fucking bag of cookies. And I got a bag of Mother's Animal Cookies covered in candy and covered in sprinkles. And I'm laying in bed, and she's laying in bed, and we're watching the firework, and he's crunching, and I'm munching. And all of a sudden, I feel this. And I went, what's up, Holmes? She goes, well, let me have a cookie. It's your celery, man. 7.5 years clean, my sponsor died of cancer. Before he passed away, we were at an H&I event, and my current sponsor was the speaker at the podium, Bob S. And my sponsor, Dan, he looks at me and he says, Richard, when I die, and you know that day is coming, that's your sponsor. And Jesse Joe had never lied to me before. And I still follow his direction today, because I went up to that gentleman and I asked him. And he said, you hang with Jesse, when the day comes, we'll talk. And Bob S. has been my sponsor now for over 12 years. At 10 years clean, my mother passed away from a heart attack. I gave her my 10-year medallion. I put it in her hand at the services, and she's buried with it today. She got the son she deserved for 10 years of her life. That was the least I could do. I have a home group. Meets on Monday nights in Rancho Cucamonga. Jeff's been there. It's called the We Do Recover Group of Narcotics Anonymous. If you don't have a home group, you're pushing a shopping cart because you're fucking homeless and it ain't. You need to go to a place that makes you accountable, either to yourself or to the group, that makes you visible, where everybody knows your name. So that when you reach that point where you're sliding one way or the other, there's somebody there to pick you up and grab you by the neck and say, what the fuck are you doing? Sit your ass down, get some coffee here, get a cookie. Well, I need that. I don't know about you, but I need that. I need to be accountable to somebody. So 10 years clean, when my mother passed away, I come out of the chapel. We're rolling my mother's coffin out the sidewalk to the hearse. And across the street, under the street lamp, were three men. Two home group members and one sponsee. And they weren't involved in the service. They didn't infringe on my family's grief. They stood across the street. And you know how we think our own shit up here? This head told me what they were doing was saying, if you need us, right over here. This thing moved again, right? It'll be 5 years this May, my wife passed away from cancer. I held her in my arms when she took her last breath. I chased the hospice nurse out, and I gave her a bath, and I combed her hair, and I said goodbye to her. My sponsor died. I didn't get loaded. My mother died. I didn't get loaded. My wife died in my arms, and I didn't get loaded. See, this is a program of we don't get loaded no matter what. And if you choose, like it says in Just for Today, to live dirty and be clean, you will suffer the consequences. What those might be, I don't know. Because some have survived through worse. But when that heart gets pulled, you'll know it. You'll know that moment when you go, wait a minute, this is some real shit here. This is some real stuff. I'm an old dope fiend, man, and the only thing I know how to do perfectly is get loaded. Everything else is a crapshoot for me. So I have to be diligent. I have to talk to a newcomer. I had no choice to come up here. I had to do this. I had to. And the reason why I had to is because my life depends on it. I had to, yes. I don't know about you, but see, I have a disease that takes me where I don't want to go, keeps me longer than I want to stay, and charges me more than I can ever afford to pay. I have a disease that thrives in the dark, grows in the shadows. It has to be exposed, disclosed. Or else if I don't do that, it will annihilate me. It wants to isolate me, it wants to separate me, and it wants to annihilate me. And I'm one of them dumb fuck men that'll bleed to death one drop of blood at a time. And I'll just suffer for some years. I ain't gonna go out quick. Because I'm a survivor. I told you that, man. Two tours in NAR, Bronze Star, Purple Heart. I did some shit, man, that a lot of other people couldn't have handled. I'm not saying I'm a tough guy, because I'm not. But I know how to survive. I know how to survive. And some of the blessings I have with the short, brief time I've been here in Narcotics Anonymous are beyond my understanding. I woke up one day and I had a job that, quite frankly, I would do for free. So I never have to go to work. I go do some shit I love doing and I get paid. That's the epitome of free shit. My job sends me to the penitentiaries where they have substance abuse programs up and down the state, and I get to go in and do exactly what I'm doing right now. Talking about a new way to live. And it's a choice you make. And then I go to lunch. Fuck, how cool is that? Not only that, they give me a company car, a company credit card, they fly me all over the place. Free shit. And when I eat, I save the receipts and get reimbursed. Like, I don't eat when I'm at home, right? But they do it. They're willing to pay me. I'm willing to take it. I don't know how I got that job. I was at a meeting one day. Somebody said, Richard, you've been doing that H&R panel over there at CRC. Why don't you give me a resume, man? We'll get you a job in there. That's how it started. You know, I'll go real quick. I'm going to run through the 12 steps real fast and take notes because there's a test later. Four parts of step one for me. Admittance, acceptance, willingness, and surrender. If I can admit, accept, and be willing to surrender to this process as well as the disease, I gain a gift that I've never had in my life, and that's honesty. The spiritual principle of the first step you might hear from somebody else might be different. But the way I see it, to me, it's honesty. And it's not honesty at the cash register. It doesn't mean I ain't stealing shit from my boss. It means that for the very first time in my life, I'm honest with me. And I admit that, you know what, something ain't right. You know, the second step talks about restoring me to sanity. And you guys know what insane is, right? You've heard it over and over and over, right? And you expect to do the results, right? Doing that shit over and over. I don't believe that. Bullshit. My definition of insanity, and it says it somewhere in the literature, and I didn't read it when I heard it and repeated it. I used to believe this, and then I read it. Backwards, right? And that is doing the same thing over and over and over, knowing what the result's going to be, and then fucking doing it anyway. That's insane, when you know what's going to happen, but you do it anyway. My sponsor says, you know what, you cannot work these steps, Richard, the way everybody else does because you're too fucking smart. You got that college degree mentality. I know some shit. So he said, go buy you a dictionary. So I went and got a dictionary, and I found out I didn't know what I thought I knew. And I read the definition of restore in the second step, and you know what it said? To bring back to its natural state. So that makes an assumption, the second step makes an assumption that at one point in my life I was sane and I was making rational decisions. Because that's what insanity is. Not doing shit rationally. But sanity is making rational decisions based on good information. And my information was all screwed up. So I got a little hope in there. Went on to the third step, and I said, you know what, Jesse Joe, I don't know about this third step shit, man. I ain't one for, I'm a recovering Catholic to begin with. And I don't know how to follow my need to pray. I don't know how to do that. In fact, you know what, I ain't doing that. Because he wasn't listening to me when I was in the Oshawa Valley in 1968. He didn't hear me then, so where is he now? He said, it's real easy, Richard. He said, take your shoes. Because you do have shoes, don't you? So yeah, I got some shoes. He goes, and slide them way up under your bed. Way, way, way up under your bed. And I said, why? So in the morning when you get up, you put on your shoes, you got to get down on your hands and knees and reach way down under that bed to pull those shoes out. He said, then while you're there, ask God for some help for the day. That's all. God help me today. Because you ain't got to have no long, drawn-out shit. You don't have to have no prayer cloth and, you know, soft music playing, candles and all that shit. Just get down there. He said, just get down there and ask for some help. He said, I said, but I don't understand that turn my will and my life over stuff. And I don't get that. He goes, it's real easy. It's real basic and simple. You do the right thing for the right reason without a witness, and you can't help but live in the grace of a higher power. because you're being the best person you can be daily. And that's all God ever wanted for you, was to be a good person. You know, and the fourth step was all about that inventory. And I told you about when I got here, I was one of those mimickers, and I could memorize and throw shit that regurgitate right back at you. And I heard some shit in there. I heard that guy Two Fingers Bob, remember him? He got up and shared one time about bank robbery, FBI, high-speed chase, shooting up dope in his neck, armored car robbery. That caught my attention. Armored car robbery. That sounds cool. You know, when I was a kid, when I was about 8 years old, they even have a museum downtown LA, you probably know about it, called Helms Bakery. They got a museum for the Helms Bakery. When I was a kid growing up, Helms Bakery would come through by my house in San Bernardino, by my mom's place, in a little truck. And he'd go by there, every kid that had a sugar addiction would come running out the fucking door with their little money and they're going to get them a donut. And he would open up the back of that truck and he'd pull out this long-ass drawer. And there they were. Big donuts, little donuts, chocolate covered, candy covered, icing, frosting, all this shit on them donuts, man. And I'm going, Mom, give me a quarter, donut, give me a quarter, come on, let's go. And I go out there and get me that donut. Got that quarter. Oh, he'd pull out that donut, and he used to wear these little things on their waist. Like that little chain would come flying out, right? If you remember those, you're fucking old. He'd pop out that chain, man. I'd give him my quarter. Oh, by the way, the donut was a nickel. That tells you how long ago that was. And he'd give me my donut and two dimes, and as soon as he popped that thing like that, he was wearing his pouch, his $5 bill fell out of his pouch. I put my foot up. Not my donut. He slides his drawer back in that truck, shuts the door, and goes driving down the street, and I'm watching. He turns the corner. I reach down and grab me my $5. That was my armored car robbery. I put that in my fourth step. Right? All this shit that I didn't really do. Because I heard it from you people. Because see, my life was boring. You know, I'm a button tab, right? Pleated trousers, straight. What you see here? If you saw me 30 years ago, I looked exactly like this. Only I had hair and a girl. So I learned this stuff from you guys, and I said this fourth step to my sponsor Jesse Bill, and he said, "Well, that's pretty good, man. I saw that on the ABC movie of the week last night." So, write the real shit. So I wrote the real fourth step, shared it with my sponsor. We got to that part, and it took courage, and it took some commitment, it took some honesty, it took some hope that there was some relief waiting for me. I had to believe that, because that's what you guys talked about, and some of you showed up in meetings, and you were smiling. You couldn't have all got laid that day. So I figured somebody was, you know, happy because it was a good day. So I tried it. And then we got to the sixth and seventh step, and he was talking about shortcomings and character defects. And I said, what the fuck's the difference? And Jesse Joe said, well, that's easy, man. He said, the shortcomings like getting a flat tire on the freeway. I said, really? He goes, character defect is continuing to drive thinking that it's going to fix itself. Lazy fuckers, you did that, huh?
I wonder why everybody had that choice.
So it's behavior that I needed to stop doing and my life would improve. And I saw you guys doing it and I believed you and I did it. The eighth and ninth step is all about getting right with people that I had harmed all my life. Had to make that list. Had to make some amends. You know, I grew up in Newport Beach. There's a place called Henry's Market right near the pier. Still there today, but it's owned by a corporation. Old man Henry used to own that place, and he hired me when I was a teenager. And when I first came back from Vietnam, he gave me that job. And I would rent out surf riders to people that were coming in from Santa Ana and San Bernardino, big, you know, big air mattresses, right? And I would rent them $2, and I'd put $1 in the back and a box and $1 in my pocket, $1 in the box and $1 in my pocket. I went back to make amends to Henry after I got clean, and I'm upstairs. He lived above the store, and I sat down with him, and I said, you know, Henry, I beat you out of some money back when I first was got back to Vietnam. He goes, yeah. He says, you're a good old boy, so you start using them drugs. I started laying out $20 bills on my coffee table. And when I stopped, he looked at me and goes, that ain't all the money either, brother. Bottom line is, he knew what I was doing. But as a kid growing up right there in that neighborhood, he was like a, you know, like a family member to me, right? So he didn't, he just shined it on. And he's like, I can't take that money. He goes, you go give that to the church. Or give it to somebody that needs that money. And I thought, fuck, I need that money. But I followed his direction. Sometimes amends, you don't want to do by yourself. I don't know about you, but I don't know. By the way, for those of you that are new, you don't have to pay the dope man back. Fuck it. When he shows up at a meeting, picks up a newcomer chip, then you might want to take him out to buy him a dinner, buy him a cheeseburger. So the 8th and 9th step was all about getting right with the world. First 3 steps I had to get right with me, then I had to find a God and get right with God, then I had to get right with you. And 11 and 12 are the maintenance steps, 10, 11, and 12. And I'm a firm believer, and this may not be your philosophy, but it is mine, and I'm going to share it with you anyway, that the 12 steps are designed for you to do once. Because if you're going back and redoing it over and over and over again, it ain't no different than being insane, in my opinion. And I'm opinionated. Because by design, they're going to take you to a power of your own understanding. They're going to clean your house. You're going to clean your house. You're going to clean the street around your house. You're going to learn a better way to live. And then you've got that all-important 10th step that says, when I messed up, I do something about it right now. Which means you don't have to create a new 4th step and a new 5th step. Which means that your life can continue to stay on that righteous path. But being a dope fiend, when I hit that 10th step, admit when I'm wrong, I want a plea bargain. Let's discuss this down to a lesser charge. The 11th step I do every day. The maintenance steps. And let me tell you something about maintenance. I'm not a maintenance kind of person, but it reflects itself in my life today. Before I got clean, I used to have an old Datsun pickup truck. I had my surfboard hanging out the back. I'd drive that thing up and down the coast highway. One day, this loud noise started happening. Loud started knocking. And it got louder and louder. And the people on the street were standing there watching me drive by. What the fuck are you looking at? I knew something was wrong, though, so I had to fix it. So I stopped at Pep Boys and bought a better radio. That was my idea of maintenance. I don't hear it. It must be okay. I don't see it. It must be gone. When I first got clean, my idea of being responsible, when the light bill came, put it at the bottom of the pile. If I don't see it, my bill's taken care of. Today I do them as they come in. And I learned how to be responsible with those maintenance steps, with that 10th step, how to fix those things before they become a problem. When the tire goes flat, pull over, change the motherfucker. I can make it to the next off-ramp and go to the gas station, but by the time you get there, you ain't got no tire no more anyway. Why not take it off and fix it, right? It happens. Sometimes changing that tire can be dangerous. A lot of traffic going by. I use a lot of metaphors in case you didn't notice. So you got to watch out for that oncoming traffic while you change that tire. So be safe when doing it. Always consider yourself. If all you did today was stay clean, you're cheating yourself. 12-step works if you work it. Find a God of your own understanding. After almost 19 years, by the way, 13 days from now, I have 19 years clean, and you need to readjust that schedule. How many of you ever tried to check a kitchen attitude when you go to a convention 2 weeks before your birthday? This is hell, doesn't it? And here's the thing about it, though. I'll bet you everybody sitting around you knows that your clean days in another week will be better. We all have How many measure things by increments of half? No offense intended, sir. None whatsoever, but call your sponsor. I do that, right? the glass as half full, not half empty. You know, I'm responsible to an extent. I don't do everything perfect. My brain is still broke. I still need input from other people. After all this time I've been clean, I still go to 5 meetings a week. And I'm going to end with this. At 18 months clean, my sponsor says you need to find a higher power. All right, I'll do that. Okay, I'll do that. So I went to every fucking meeting I could get to in my old beat-up truck. And I found a higher power. 3 months later, she had me move out. I said, get the fuck out. I said, Jesse Joe, man, I got almost 2 years clean now. Do I still have to keep going to 5 meetings a week? He said, no. You know. I said, oh, cool. He goes, did one of those meetings save your life? And I had to admit, yes. He said, do you know which one it was? I thought about it, I said, no. And I realized that I've got to go to all fucking 5 because my pick has always been broke. And my luck, I picked the wrong one and I'd be loaded. So after almost coming up on soon to be 19 years clean, I still go to 5 years a week, and one of them is a home group. I talk to my sponsor on a regular basis. I sponsor men all over the world. I sponsor a guy in Denmark. We do it over the internet. I met him at the World Convention in San Diego. I shared at a marathon meeting. He was sitting next to me. We've been hooked up ever since. That kind of shit didn't happen when I was hanging out in the, you know, on my way to Santa Ana to pick up a little black car. My life consisted of getting loaded and not being loaded. Nothing else in between. When I'm not loaded, I'm thinking about getting loaded. When I'm getting loaded, I'm thinking about, fuck, this is going to run out. I'm going to have to give me some more. Today, man, I live a life that's, like, beyond, as they say, beyond my wildest dreams. And one of the beautiful things about this fellowship is that I got to meet you. I got to come here to Tulare, man, and expand my family, my network of friends. That kind of shit didn't work when I was getting loaded. Sponsor and a sponsee walking down the street in Chicago, a cold ass city. Walking down the street, sponsee's doing what he always does, snivel.
My name is Dan, and man, I can't get laid, and you know what? And my boss doesn't understand me.
And the sponsee's doing what he does, he's listening. Okay? And they're walking down the street in Chicago, middle of winter, it's cold out, and they look up in front of us, and here's this little old man, and he's got one of them walkers. And he can barely move. He's struggling to get down the street. And he comes up to the stairways leading to the ramp for the L train. And he needs to get up there to catch that train. So the sponsor and the sponsee get on both sides of this little old man, and they're going to help him go up them stairs. Be a good person today. And just then, this young 21-year-old, hard-bodied, beautiful, big-breasted young chick goes running by them, taking the stairs 2 steps at a time. Gets up at the top of the ramp, the wind blows off of Lake Michigan, her dress blows up, and she don't have no panties on. And the sponsor and the sponsee stop, and the old man, and they're stuck at the bottom of the stairs, and the old man with the walker's looking up, and a big smile comes over his face. And he looks over at the two guys trying to help him, and he says, you know, sometimes life's pretty good.